There we go. So mahalo DJ Shoots for that, and mahalo to our listeners and our members who make this show possible, our underwriters as well. This out-of-the-box special is made possible by the good folks like you, as well as the good folks at Kalaheo Chiropractic and at Ching Young. Here we go from the start.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And Dove is pointing out something that I'm going to play in a little bit. And before we go there, though, I got to make sure we do this.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. The views and opinions are ours and not the board's, not the staff, and not DJ Shoots because he's out the door. Drive safe, brother. And thank you, Dove, for a little bit of that. I'm going to, where'd it go? Play this right here. Whose computer is that? Just remember that KKCR listens.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Here we
the
go.
The Mali'e Foundation presents the annual Kauai Mokihana Festival.
We'll just do a little pause on that.
The Mali'e Foundation
No, that wasn't a pause. That was a repeat. There we go. Got it down. And always wonderful to hear Paul Massey's voice. And folks, it is happening right now. The Mokihana Festival is island-wide. Good stuff going on. So check that out. I'll play that in a little bit. But I wanted to let folks know it's a little bit after 4 o'clock. The phone lines will be open. We've already had a couple phone calls already. And we've got a special guest in the office. Officially here, I'm going to read his bio, introductory bio. His name is Jediah McRoberts. He's a Kauai resident and a registered nurse. He's worked professionally in a variety of settings, including long-term care facilities, hospice, pediatrics, home health care, and health care systems management. And he's currently the lead director of the Kauai Dispensary Project, an organization that intends on applying for a dispensary license for the island of Kauai. So for the next hour and 50-plus minutes, we're going to be talking about this whole issue of medicinal marijuana. We'll probably dabble in a little recreational marijuana, too, not in the booth or outside, just as a conversation piece. You, as a listener, are more than welcome to do whatever you like. You know, grab your favorite beverage of choice, sit back for the next couple of hours, and enjoy the community conversation. The phone lines, like I said, will be open at 826-7771. That is our in-the-booth line. Brother Tim is manning the phones as we speak. And then if you're off-island, 866-275-1112. That's let me double-check that. 866-275-1112. And that will get you in the booth. And this conversation about medicinal marijuana and the dispensary law, House Bill, I want to say 341. There we go. punch the one right in.
It's House Bill 321.
There we go. House Bill 321, signed by the governor most recently. But before we go there, I got a little musical teaser for us all from Peter Tosh. You guessed it. It goes like this.
Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will. That's the best thing you can do.
Go a little Peter Tosh to help us set the mood for today's conversation. The phone lines are open already. Got a couple of phone calls coming in, 826-7771. We're talking about medicinal marijuana and the legalization of marijuana in the state of Hawaii. Seems to be a trend. We've got a special guest. His name is Jediah McRoberts. Jediah, you're on mic too, so go ahead and speak into that tube there.
Hey,
right on, sounding good. And Brother Tim, you're right there.
Hey, I think I'm here, Jimmy.
Right on.
Okay.
So
I got a quick question right off the bat.
Is your question or is this a caller question?
It's a caller question.
All right,
coming through
you.
Me,
just wanted
so
to
I'm
be
voicing
clear,
it.
Because we know some folks, hey, how come you didn't ask my question?
Right.
Wait a minute. We did. It was just disguised as
well, I'm
going to
preface it. So I don't have a female voice to impersonate, but it was a female caller that called in.
And thanks for calling. We appreciate
thank you.
That.
Really, really. And the other people ahead of time. And Jediah, at the end of this is certainly directed towards you. The caller wanted to know, once again, in your resume or background, you know, as you're bringing your expertise, experience with this field and everything, you know, from where exactly are you coming from? Is it based here in Hawaii, or do you have prior experience with trying to establish this kind of the essence on the mainland as well, too, i.e. continent?
Well, before you answer that
Let
me just back us up 1 second, because
thanks.
You're representing the Kauai Dispensary Project. So in answering that question, tell us a little bit about the Dispensary Project and how that got there, how you have kind of, from your experience and what you know about here on Kauai, how it's all coming together. And you'll satisfy my first question as well as our callers. And the mic is all yours, brother.
Great. So I've been a registered nurse for nearly 8 years, a graduate of Kauai Community College. I have, in my professional and personal life, seen the many benefits of medical cannabis with patients, family members, friends who have seen positive results in their various ailments. That being said, I've been following the industry for about 10 years now.
Okay.
And with this recent passage of the bill, it allowed me the opportunity to do something that I felt was necessary on this island. So I formed the Kauai Dispensary Project. We're a local group of individuals from different professional backgrounds whose intent is to apply for the license here for Kauai. And our main goal is to keep it 100%, if possible, locally owned and operated to serve the patients and community here on island.
Right on. Now, I guess to satisfy the caller who want to know your background, where are you from?
Originally from Oahu.
Uh-huh.
My family moved over here when I was 12, and I have lived here pretty much ever since.
So consider yourself an island boy.
Local boy is what we'll say.
Pretty much.
Yeah, right on.
Kapa'a High grad.
Yeah.
There you go, Warriors. Right? There you go, caller.
KCC grad as well, as, in the health profession.
Correct.
And you said, you know, been following the industry for about 10 years. How old is this industry?
Here in Hawaii, the first bill directly relating to medical cannabis or marijuana was enacted in 2000, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So it's about 15 years that Hawaii's allowed patients to be able to find their own remedy.
Correct.
If they have the resources
exactly.
to do so.
So the past 15 years, the bill allows for either a patient or a caregiver themselves to grow up to 7 plants and provide medicine that way.
Mm-hmm.
So this new law, it's a big change. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't have the ability to grow, whether
right.
it's, you know, the confines that they can't.
When you live in a condominium.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it's just not a difficult, I mean, it is a difficult plant to grow and to have an adequate supply.
Right. I mean, what other patients have to go in the backyard and go put amendments or add compost or do some clipping to get their prescription filled?
Correct. So mm-hmm. you're seeing a lot of patients actually turn to the black market, which is an unregulated market.
Right.
You know, they don't know what they're getting. They don't know the lab testing values of what they're getting, or if there's even any kind of forms of mold, mildew, pesticides
sure.
Within the plant.
And before we get into kind of some of the standards that the Kauai Dispensary Project is going to try to uphold or what we would see as industry standards for patient or consumer benefit or consumer health, let's talk a little bit about this notion of medicinal marijuana and the as opposed to what we always joke about, the recreational marijuana use. What is it that you talked about it in your opening statement about yeah. some of the ailments and some of the, if you will, benefits that you saw? Certainly, if you listen to Peter Tosh, everything from asthma and tuberculosis, we're gonna do better if we smoke a little bit of the herb.
Correct.
What do you see or medicinally? What is the science telling us?
The science is still new because of the Schedule I status and its federal status as being an illicit drug.
Mm-hmm.
There's very limited research done in the states. So the benefits at this time, we're still learning.
Mm-hmm. Not as well documented as maybe other medicinal products.
Correct.
Okay.
That being said, you know, I think the state of Hawaii has a list of qualifying conditions. Some of those conditions include chronic pain, nausea, wasting syndrome, people suffering from Crohn's disease, HIV, AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a plethora of conditions that, you know, cannabis itself are being able to treat in a way that conventional medications, these side effects are a lot less from some of the other medications that these patients have been taking. So it's a true benefit for a lot of people out there.
Tim, you got to say something.
Well, I too was going to ask in the back of my mind, do we have like any politicians per se on this island that are helping support, you know, with this cause, you know, of you putting together and pushing forward? you know, the legislation as well as the passage, you know, for the dispensary project or with what you're dealing with here. Have you had backing from council folk or other representatives?
Or if maybe not backing, is there some opposition? Do you feel like there's folks that are either concerned or absolutely opposed to the idea of Kauai having a Costco for medicinal marijuana?
Yes, you know, there are both sides to that question. I'll answer the latter part first. When the article in the Garden Island newspaper came out, say about a month and a half ago, it was pretty clearly stated that I think Life Choices Kauai has fairly strong, I wouldn't say opposition, but strong concerns of the medicine ending up in the wrong hands, that being of the keiki of Kauai. As far as Kauai County Council and our representatives and senator, I haven't personally heard anything, whether they oppose or are for it.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to ask now, when I'm hearing this and you're talking about, you know, the concerns of it getting into the wrong hands like the keiki. Now, when you're talking about the forms of the medicinal that is coming out, can you tell us the different forms that could possibly be used in the medicinal realm or, as you know, the pharmacological breakdown as to how it would be? So it's not just you're getting a raw product and you're going to be sitting there and doing nothing but rolling and or eating a raw product. I'm sure that there are a number of different things or different ways that this product or whatever the medicinal will be used, correct?
Absolutely. So besides the conventional way of inhaling the product, you have capsules, you have edibles, lozenges, you have oils, tinctures. There are a variety of methods of taking the medicine. Some, you know, are probably a lot safer for users. For example, someone who has lung cancer would probably not want to inhale the product, and something like a edible or an oil would be a more appropriate choice for someone like that.
And it's nice to be able to have those options given your certain conditions. The article that you referenced earlier, the one by Alden Alavea in the Garden Island newspaper, that was August 3rd, 2015, so earlier this summer, you mentioned the Life Choices Kauai Coordinator, which is the county, if you will, of Kauai's anti-drug czar, if you will, Teresa Koki, sweet woman who has the best interests of our keiki and the community health, and has concerns, legitimate concerns, that if this medicine is available freely to patients, is it possible that young adolescent children of adult patients might have access to that? Any thoughts in regards to is that a concern that you guys are prepared to address, or is it something that obviously the family has to kind of take
some form of accountability?
Well, I mean, if you're going to go to the liquor store and you're an adult and you buy alcohol and you ingest it, do you just leave that out for your kids to ingest it? Do you, you know, encourage your kids to participate in that?
Absolutely. The same with prescription medication. If you know you break your leg and you go get a fill for Vicodin, where are you going to leave that within the house?
And what's the discussion that you're going to have with your children about, hey, these are my medicinal treatment, these are my pills, or these are my lozenges, whatever they might be, and you're not to have them?
Correct.
This isn't okay for you, and it's okay for me because I'm suffering, and this helps me through my suffering.
Correct.
And I guess, you know, these are the things. I don't know how much law enforcement is willing to lend support here, because this is traditionally an area where they've been opposed. This is, you know, part of their bread and butter type of operations is to, you know, bring it down and make sure that the drug users are no longer freely available to influence the youth of our community.
Yes, you know, I think, as you mentioned, it all begins with education, educating the public, educating our children. I think part of the bill text with the new dispensary bill is the Department of Health will be creating an actual unique position within the department of basically that, an educator who comes to schools and communities to discuss, you know, cannabis as medicine,
mm-hmm.
and how we are supposed to treat that.
Mm-hmm.
So they've taken the appropriate steps, I think, to begin that dialogue.
In that same article, and this kind of addresses the question Tim had in regards to support, Dee Moore, caller representative from, I think it's District, oh my gosh, is it District 16 out on the west side? She was the bill's sponsor. If I'm right, according to the article, she suggests that it's a. Here we go. If I can get it up, trying to find her quote. Representative Dee Moore Carr, District 16, an introducer of House Bill 321, said the intent of the measure was to phase out the black market. Quote, we can get the black market totally out of it the way it's going. The growers themselves, the caretakers, there is no enforcement. She said there, I think that there's a where a lot of our illegal access is coming from in that black market. And until we get the rules in place, we can't really enforce it. And there'll be very strict rules, even for the caregivers allowed to grow. And they'll be monitored very closely until it goes into effect. Now, this monitoring and the regulatory process, we're in the rules making phase.
Absolutely. So,
so it's a kind of an open slate right now.
Yes. So the state legislature produced this bill,
mm-hmm.
and then handed over general guidelines to the Department of Health. The Department of Health, currently as we speak, are making the final rules and regulations that we'll see for this dispensary,
mm-hmm.
dispensary bill.
Yeah, and we'll go back, take one step back. You mentioned the Department of Health overseeing this. Currently, that's who's kind of the state regulatory agency. But prior to that, before the dispensary bill, the Department of Public Safety oversaw the medical marijuana distribution system, or not the distribution system, but the oversight of regulating that. Tell us a little bit about some of the conflict there and why there was a shift made.
Well, it truly is a health issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is the medical field. It is titled medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
So it is more appropriate for the Department of Health, an agency that regulates health, to oversee the program. And I believe that transition happened at the beginning of this year from public safety to DOH.
Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, we've got a caller now who's got a healthcare related either comment or question. Caller, are you there? Hold on. I guess I got to do this and this. Caller, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
All right. Thanks for joining us here on Out of the Box.
Hi. I've been listening to your conversation, and I appreciate it. And I just wanted to share my point of view. I've been a nurse for 30 years. All of the areas of health care that your speaker has said that he does, I'm also been involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is more kind of on a personal level, because in my field I haven't had a lot of people wanting or being open to using medical marijuana, or physicians prescribing it, maybe Marinol, to increase appetite. But most recently we did. I had a 91-year-old mother who's in chronic pain, and she's in New Mexico, and we did finally talk her primary care physician into medical marijuana, because basically morphine and OxyContin and heavy-duty drugs were all that they could offer her. And there are many different types, and I support a dispensary, because the dispensary is a professional who knows the makeup of the product that they're selling. They can say, this is made up for pain, this salve is good, this under-the-tongue tincture is good, or this lollipop, whatever. And I like that better than what we have today, which are independent growers who grow but yet cannot give you any product analysis. And it's that product analysis that I hope the dispensary uses. And then, to me, it's a professional situation.
Absolutely.
That's kind of my point. I mean, it does help her pain at 91,
mm-hmm.
and I had to talk her into it.
Yes. I'd like to go back to that point that you mentioned about testing. A big part of this bill that was put in is that all products must be tested through a third-party agent. So there'll be adequate testing for levels of THC, CBD, CBN, as well as testing for mold, mildew, pesticides, or other contaminants. So the patient's going to know exactly what they're getting. And this was not being seen previous to this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, caller, for bringing that up.
Yeah, I support that because I think it's a legitimate, and again, I got my 91-year-old mother using a salve and a tincture and gets rid of the morphine, and she can sleep at night and, without it.
Wow. So you as a direct, if you will, kind of user, or your mom being the user, but you observing the benefits, are, if you will, sold on this.
I'm 100, and I had to talk her doctor into it, and he supported us.
Uh-huh. And having good results. He's behind you now as well. It's not like you have to kind of you don't struggle trying to get your prescription filled for her.
No.
Good for you. And I think, you know, kudos to your doctor for being willing to listen to your mom and yourself as far as what's good for their, treatment plan.
Yeah, I think it's better having her be comfortable than so heavily drugged that she falls because she's 91.
Right.
And breaks her hip.
Right.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for calling. Appreciate that. Aloha. And, I guess we'll probably hear some more testimonies. If you're a listener out there and you have concerns, this is a great time to bring up concerns as well. We're talking with Jediah McRoberts. He is a Kauai resident and is leading up a consortium or a group of individuals here in Kauai that want to have a locally owned and managed dispensary as part of the medicinal marijuana bill. The Kauai Dispensary Project is working to structure their organization and become one of the licensees, one of the state collaborators in being able to legally provide medicinal cannabis for patients here on Kauai. We have another phone call. Aloha, caller. Is this Representative Morikawa?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Aloha, D. Jimmy Trujillo. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jimmy.
And you were one of the sponsors of the bill. Can you share a little bit about the if you will, the impetus to bring this forward and how you were, if you will, won over to support kind of a radical shift in how things were being done before?
Yeah, well, I was on the Committee of Health from the first time I got elected, so mm-hmm. this subject was always there. But I also had experience with my mom who had cancer mm-hmm. Years ago, and back then she could only get the pill form of marijuana, which was Marinol.
Okay.
And, you know, as a cancer patient, she couldn't take it because it upset her really bad in her stomach. So, you know, thinking about what she went through and then seeing that medical use was legal, but how to get it was silent,
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, and with the new chair that came on, I believe, 2 years ago in Chair Bilotti, I think we have more support. So we pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, the best thing was to make it available, to make it safe, and to make it come out of a secure facility.
Sure,
with all the tracking in place.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us, Dee, a little bit about the, I guess, opposition to the bill. You know, obviously, you guys introduce a bill, and then there's going to be amendment made, and there's concerns addressed in the whole legislative testimony process. Tell us from the beginning, what did you guys present, and then how did you have to change the bill, and how were you able to satisfy all parties so that we were able to successfully pass this bill?
Right. We have to go through a lot of research. We have a lot of conference calls with other states to see what the problems were so we could figure out how to address the problems in our bill. Because we came in after some of the states, we knew what their problems were. And I think a lot of that was captured into this bill, like the tracking, limiting access, knowing how much the patient takes, limiting how much the patient can have at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we addressed those issues, it was more accepted, but it's still going to be, you know, like alcohol or any prescription drug, there's always that concern about getting into the hands of minors.
Sure.
And, you know, we can't assure that it's not going to happen, but the limitation of what a patient can have would probably help with that, because you're not, as a patient, you're not going to go and give it out to other people because, you know, we're tracking how much you take.
Right, right. You know, Dee, from your research and what was shared with you during this legislative process, what did we learn from other states? What are some of the examples whether it's California or, you know, recently Colorado or Washington, what have we learned from other people's experience?
I think the biggest thing is we have learned that you need to know how much a patient is getting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think the tracking system in Colorado is, I don't think there's any.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Washington they have a better tracking system, which is where we got most of our information from. You track the plant from when it first started until it's destroyed, so you know exactly how much the dispensary has. And you'll know exactly how much the patient has access to. That, and of course, you still have to eventually get it out of the hands of the caregivers, because when you're a caregiver, you grow, and you don't know where those plants are going.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why written into the bill is getting rid of that portion where caregivers no longer will be allowed. You have to go dispensary and get your medicines, period.
So there will be, if you will, no more ability for, if you will, like a caregiver to grow six plants for their family member.
Right, that's written into the bill.
Mm-hmm. So then,
gives them enough time to know that it's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think in my, we have a survey out, if you don't know, and that is probably the most asked question or complaint at this moment,
yeah,
is why is the caregiver program being removed, I think, except for the islands of Molokai and Lanai.
I know, that is a big complaint, but that's where we're getting a lot of the excess marijuana out.
Okay,
I guess... Because there's no enforcement attracting on that.
I have quite a few patients that have said that they need specific strains that are specific to their ailments that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, only having one dispensary on island, it'll be hard for that one dispensary to satisfy all the patient's needs.
I don't think so. But then, you know, that number can change.
Correct.
The number of licensees on
right.
Uh-huh. Now, tell us about that, because when I first heard a little bit about the details in our pre-show conversation mm-hmm. with Jediah, that essentially we're kind of creating a monopoly for the dispensary licensee. They're mm-hmm. the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it seems like, well, then that might not be so ideal for the consumer and the consumer choice.
Well, that's another thing. We had a lot more dispensaries in our original bill.
Uh-huh.
But that was one of the compromises, because they were saying, now, hey, we have to limit too many.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing says we need to stop one.
Yeah,
like I said.
Yeah, I believe
we'll see how that goes.
Correct. I think
Big Island Maui has two, Oahu has more.
Yeah, and I believe in December of 2017, the Department of Health has the opportunity
exactly
to create more dispensary licensees.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So we're starting small. We'll expand if we see a need.
Right.
So, Tim, Excuse me, got a question.
Representative D, as I'm listening to you, you're saying that somehow there's going to be some way that they're going to justify the level of usage and, you know, that the person, patient that may be taking this, you know, is only going to be given specific amounts, you know, or whatever. And how is this determination going to be coming, you know, or happening? And, I mean, because I'm feeling there are certain times that a person's pain or issue may be stronger at times, in which you may need more in that moment. And if you're saying, well, wait a second, you know, you're only at this level that we've given you as prescribed.
Well, remember now, the bill only states 4 ounces at one time that you can possess.
But now, when you're talking 4 ounces, is that raw product?
Only in the flat product. But there are other products that are going to be made available.
Of course.
The, like you said, the gummy bears, the lozenges, and whatever.
Right.
So those things are going to have to come up in rules.
And the reasoning, and I'm just kind of wondering what through this whole process, the reasoning for being, is the medical industry saying that if somebody has too much or takes too much, and I'm sure maybe there must be some accounting or looking at the whole processes of the side effects if one has too much, I'm wondering what makes that determination, you know, that it is that detrimental to the person if they're taking too much of this?
Good question. I have big concerns about that. I visited a dispensary in Colorado, and I've seen, of course, it's recreational marijuana, so access is to anything and any amount. So if you're buying it, you can take as much as you like until you overdose. There's no control over that. In fact, I'm hearing that there is a rise in the children that are being admitted to emergency rooms because of that.
Is that the reason you removed edibles from the bill text itself?
Yeah, we were afraid of that.
Okay.
But that, you know, that could change. I really don't know.
Now, let's talk about that in regards to changes or amendments. What does that process look like, and how will patients and patient advocates be involved in that process?
Well, I don't think you need a law to do that kind of stuff. I think it can be done through the Department of Health rules.
So it'd be an administrative rule change?
Yes, they could do it that way, because this is not something that you want to mandate, that kind of stuff. It's just going too deep.
Now,
and we don't know enough about it because it's new. It's not legal to do the research. So it's hard. It's a tough one to do. There's so much we might learn from the dispensaries being able to produce it and to kind of, they would be the ones to kind of look at the plant and see what they're going to produce or make or manufacture.
Correct. So this is a learning process for everyone.
Right.
And I think these 8 initial licensees will have a heavy influence going forward on any changes that may need to be made. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, but there's a lot of more obstacles that the dispensary is going to have to go through. I mean, because it's an illegal substance, what do they do about their money? The banking system is not going to get involved in that. So, you know, there's still some stuff that is not... Still silent.
Now, let me ask you this in regards to working with local authorities, specifically law enforcement. How has the State Department of Health or our Kauai legislation team work with our county council? I know that much has been said in regards to concerns that Chair Raposo has in regards to dispensary and the notion of having on Kauai several places where people can come up and purchase medicinal marijuana. What is that interface looking like between the legislative or the administrative group of the governor's office and the Department of Health and local law enforcement officials or concerned county officials?
I don't know if they have any guidance on how to do this because it's medical. However, the bill allows funding to possibly go to county government for their needs in enforcement and drug treatment. And I think there's a list of other things that money from this could be used for.
Mm-hmm.
So the compromise would be, yes, we'll help you in what you need to help you with enforcement, to help you with your substance abuse, to help you with whatever it is that drugs contribute to.
Uh-huh. And so that might be a law enforcement position, or it might be a Department of Health position?
Department of Health is going to have some. Who knows? I don't know. That talk still hasn't been begun.
Right, right. And when I was talking with Jediah earlier this week about this, it seemed like there were a lot of questions that were left unanswered. And I know that legislation isn't always the most prettiest or efficient mechanism to get things done. But here we are making a shift from what was once, issue that was being covered by the Department of Public Safety. Now it's the Department of Health, and that patients were advocating for this type of next step development, where we have a dispensary where people can go up and get their prescriptions filled. Mm-hmm. Would this be something that's going to get covered in the, say, Obamacare and in our health plans? Or is there going to be a way that our health service providers are going to allow this to be part of the, if you will, kind of menu of options available for treatment?
Yeah, if it's taken off of the illegal drug list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that's a big step.
That's a big if.
Right.
A big if, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That Schedule I status is holding up a lot of things
at
this moment, not just some of the banking issues, but you're also looking at research, you know?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, even to research hemp is illegal.
Exactly. You know, and it definitely needs to drop. When you have Schedule II drugs such as, whether it be OxyContin or methamphetamine being Schedule II, and then you have a Schedule I being cannabis, which is, I guess, they're determining to have no medical of value, that needs to change moving forward.
Yeah.
And is there any dialogue between our federal representatives and our federal legislature and our local Kauai delegation or at the state level? Is there any kind of conversation, kooka going on between those at the federal level and here at the state and local level?
No, but they've seen, we try to do it through resolution, but no official dialogue.
Uh-huh. And Dee, I know that you're, you know, an advocate for, you know, community engagement and for citizens to, you know, get involved in the process. How would you encourage or recommend for whether they're patient advocates or patients or just taxpayers that want to see effective change happen? How would you encourage them or citizens that have concerns about this? How would you encourage them to engage with you and others in this process?
Well, as far as myself, they can reach me directly at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm open to any comments or concerns. You know, we're not going to know what the problem. This is a done deal, this part of it. But we're not going to know what kind of problems people are going to face in the community when it's up and running.
Uh-huh.
And we need to hear that, because if there's something that's in the law that we need to tighten up, you know, we can still do that. But they can definitely get their voices heard by contacting us.
Mm-hmm.
And myself. I'll advocate for myself.
Thanks for that. The committees that you'll be sitting on coming up, is that known, or any changes?
No changes. I'm still on health, and I'm still the chair of human services, so that's not going to change. And I'm also on judiciary, so those are key committees that will hear most of the legislation.
Both those three right there. Mm-hmm. Judiciary, health, and public safety.
And, of course, housing.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Dee, before we go, we got a question for you.
Yes, another question for me. You know, a caller called in, and, of course, they didn't want to go on the air, but they were, you know, kind of bouncing it off of me, Dee. And that is, in certain states that have, quote-unquote, legalized or even gone through the process of having, you know, the dispensaries and things of this nature, mm-hmm. that people that are low-income and disability kind, basically they have access to these things. And then all of a sudden, if you have now dispensaries, you know, and it's on a pay basis, and if they cannot afford this, does this then not cripple that poor person even more? Pardon me for using the pun, and you know that it wasn't intended in the sense that, you know, they're now not able to go and get the medicine that they need because they do not have, you know,
they can't afford it.
They have the financial ability to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is that also going to be taken in consideration when you're writing these bills and possibly looking at it, you know, towards the future, you know, with what is happening here?
Well, when I visited the dispensary in Colorado, it's pretty affordable. It's only like $20 or something for something.
Mm-hmm. Well, $20 for some people is a lot of money. You know,
no,
even
I
if you're talking,
you're saying,
and, you know, when we're looking at this.
Prescription medication can go up to the hundreds.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we haven't addressed that. We can't. It's hard because it's not a legal drug.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to go down that that road right now. If it's a legal medicine, then it could be covered, right?
Correct.
But we've gone so many years with this not happening, so it's a step. It's one step moving forward. So hopefully we can address that later.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And I think it falls, too, on the part of the dispensary licensee. You know, some of the major dispensaries in California, Harborside, for example, which is the largest dispensary in the world, actually has a program built in. For low income,
they could.
You know,
they could.
And you
they're
know,
making so much money. They
exactly.
could do all kinds of things on their own to help.
Exactly.
The low income,
you know, discounts
medicine, for medicine, now
exactly,
medicine, not talking,
you know,
recreational.
Mm-hmm. Discounts for hospice patients, for veterans.
Right.
You know, and I think that's going to fall partly on the business owner themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, it's certainly a big. I think. Jedi was sharing some, I guess, some kind of stats in regards to the economic growth that this medicinal marijuana and dispensaries are, that it's kind of phenomenal in the economic opportunity that exists. What are we thinking about in regards to stimulating local economic development related to medicinal marijuana cultivation, products that are going to be consumed at these local dispensaries? What do you think is what's on the what's on the horizon?
No, you can't even transport it. You can't move it island to island. You can't get it off. It's, economically, it's not good. I mean, we had a legislator that wanted to be able to export it from Hawaii, but you can't because it's illegal.
Because it's a Schedule I drug.
Right,
you'd basically
right. So
be trafficking.
That's not possible. Uh-huh. I mean, first, let's work with hemp. If we can get hemp going, we can cultivate hemp, manufacture that, and you know, that's our first step, I think, when it comes to marijuana products, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if you look at a local level, though, you will be creating jobs. I think it was estimated that
Well, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, there's this whole tax thing, too, I realized when I went to that dispensary where they can't even pay the federal taxes because
of the status.
Illegal.
Correct. So operating
but
a business.
The state takes their taxes, but not the federal government.
Exactly. So you have this weird umbrella effect.
Yeah.
There, you know.
Well, I don't know how the employees. Well, that would be a great job, I guess, even if you don't pay federal taxes. But.
Yeah. Right. So I've got a question that came up. The dispensaries, will they be able to honor medical marijuana cards from other states?
Beginning reciprocity, right?
Yeah, it's written into the bill. We can see maybe some problems happening with that, but we wanted to make it so that people who visited here and were legitimate patients could get it also at our dispensary.
I
think there's a portion in the bill.
Remember, this
bill is 75 pages long.
It's quite a long bill. You know, I actually have it right here. It's a pretty heavy bag.
Yeah.
But I think the text states that beginning January 1st of 2018, the Department of Health will have set up a system to honor patients, registered patients from other states to purchase products within local dispensaries in the state of Hawaii.
Dee, I've got one caller who wants to join the conversation. Do you have time for a question?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll bring that person on. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm
Representative Dee Moore, caller on the phone. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All righty. So you're asking us a question or making a comment?
I'm asking a question to Jediah on when you guys are doing this and they're saying a secure facility, are you guys growing outside or are you growing inside? The Garden Island, you know, you're allowed to have up to 3,000 plants.
Correct. So each licensee will be allowed to have two production centers. Each production center will have a maximum of 3,000 plants grown. The bill text at this moment is kind of a gray area in regards to what structure may be used. It just says a secured enclosed structure. Whether that means a warehouse with supplemental lighting or...
Look at what we pay for electricity. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Absolutely. Well, this won't be defined until the Department of Health comes out with their final rules and regulations. So, you know, they may say, you know what, you guys can do it outside if you provide secure a business plan that prevents access, you know, or it could be in a greenhouse. But, you know, they haven't come up with those final rules and regulations at this moment.
I mean, I was a caregiver. You know, I'm a caregiver for a wife who has multiple sclerosis. So, you know, it sounds like they're trying to, you know, take out the individual out of the equation and just lump it into one big mega thing. They don't have to deal with people.
So let me ask you this, since you are the caregiver for a client who I'm assuming may not be able to grow themselves.
No, can't even get out of bed.
All right, so how do you feel about them removing the caregiver program and basically forcing you to go to the dispensary to purchase products?
I think it's like a corporate thing where they're, you know, it's just like I think it's the death of the individual across our society. If you do something or you're doing something for yourself, you know, they don't want that because it empowers the individual. But, you know, we'll let one person do it all and you can go to that person. That just seems to be the structure of society nowadays.
Okay, well, I believe the caregiver program in the current bill text will be removed at the end of 2018. I think we have two legislative sessions in between now and then to make some changes, you know. And
I say to you, please
advocate, you know,
on that. So, now let me ask you another question. Let's say there's, you know, 8 people that have their license. Can those 8 people grow in one place?
That is another gray area. I think there was an article that came out a couple weeks ago of a gentleman who got basically raided by the state of Hawaii over on the Big Island for doing just that. So the current bill that we have doesn't specifically say that you can't do that, but then it doesn't say that you can do that.
Okay. Let's see. The edibles. It says the edibles are not in the bill.
At this moment, no.
Okay, so I understand that. So when you guys are doing the dispensary and stuff, what's happening with, you know, are you going to be selling edibles?
Well, we can't at this moment.
Okay, now what about manufactured goods? I mean, you're going to sell like butter and waxes?
Absolutely. That is.
Okay, and so now, does that all fall under your roof too? You're growing, you're manufacturing.
Absolutely.
So you're talking about a huge operation here.
Absolutely. So the bill is structured so that all licensees must be vertically integrated. So what that means is exactly what you said. And, not only are you providing a retail location where you can sell product, but you're also producing the plants themselves or any byproducts of the plant, whether it be, tinctures, oils, you know. So, you know, the overhead and startup costs for this are enormous, you know.
Jeez, yeah. That's why I decided to, you know, I always say the first one through the wall gets bloodied. I'll wait for you guys to blaze the trail. But I am very, you know, I'm very Akamai about the plant. And, you know, how does someone like me that wants to follow it and everything, you know, become more involved, going to meetings, talking with you, just, you know, in that aspect?
We do have a website, and I meet with people daily, actually, you know, people in your position. And, you know, our organization is really about community involvement on all levels, you know.
Well, could I set up, you know, like I'll do the website thing and set up an off,
sure.
You know,
absolutely.
Appointment with you?
Absolutely. You can just go to our website, it's www.kauaidispensary.com,
mm-hmm.
And sign up for our mailing list or email me personally, and we can talk story later.
Okay, that sounds real good. I appreciate what you're doing. I like the avenue that you're taking. And aloha. And I want to add one other thing that, you know, lack of parenting is a gateway drug. So when people come in and they're giving me all, you know, giving people grief, and all you do is watch TV and see all the side effects of medicine they're trying to push on you. So, yeah, I don't, you know, I think also that, you know, laws are getting reduced down to the lowest common denominator. Just because someone can't make a responsible decision doesn't mean, you know, my rights should be reduced or taken away. So that's all I have to say. We're moving in the right direction. Thank you. Aloha.
Thank you, caller.
Yes, appreciate you calling in. And, Dee, thanks for calling back. Sorry that we dropped you. We got Fat Finger Tim working the board. And we are at the top of the hour. I want to let you know you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ in Haleiwa, and K284AL in Anahola. Actually, I got that wrong. It's K224CQ in Anahola and K2844AL in Haleiwa. We're joined on the air with Representative D. Moore Carr from District 16 on the west side, and she is the author of House Bill 321, which is the medical marijuana dispensary bill. And we have Judiah McRoberts, a Kauai resident, who is leading the Kauai Dispensary Project. This is an organization that intends on applying for the dispensary license for the island of Kauai. Thank you both for joining us, because I know a lot of our listeners have questions about this. And so we welcome the listeners to call in at 826-7771 if you're here on island. Or if you're off island and you're joining us, you want to join us at 866-275-1112. A question I have for both of you in regards to how people will be involved with this. The rules-making process is happening now. I just read an article in Civil Beat. It suggested that the Supreme Court made a suggestion that, where is it, if I can pull it up, that lawyers will be, if you will, reprimanded for providing legal counsel to the licensee applicants. Can either one of you speak to the difficulties that that might present to develop your business plans and to try to get the best proposal forward when you apply for this project if legal counsel is not available?
You can still get legal counsel outside of the state, I believe.
So you'd have to go to an off-island?
I didn't really read that, but I can understand what they're getting at.
Mm-hmm. What is it? What are they getting at? Because it didn't make too much sense to me, the article by Anita, I want to read her name, Hofschneider, and the article is September 22nd on your birthday. So happy belated birthday to you, Representative Morikawa. The headline is "Why Lawyers Warn Not to Help Medical Marijuana Businesses." So what are they trying to prevent from happening?
You know, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you notice this is Hawaii lawyers, right?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Do we know where this came from? I mean, to me, it almost sounds. They're promoting out-of-state legal advice.
And the article suggests Hawaii lawyers can't help clients apply for high-stakes medical marijuana dispensary licenses authorized under a new state law, according to a formal opinion of the Hawaii State Supreme Court Disciplinary Board. Attorneys can provide legal advice regarding the state's newly enacted medical marijuana dispensary law, but shouldn't provide legal services to help establish or operate businesses because that would assist in committing a federal crime, the board said. So we're back to the federal law suggesting that this is a Schedule One illegal substance. And and they don't want any Hawaii certified lawyers to get involved with the illicit business of marijuana.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I know we were in discussions with the Attorney General's office to get the sale through.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's a
We have a local attorney, and we're going through this process right now. You know, it's a big hit, you know, and I'm not sure where it really came from or what, if they're truly trying to protect their lawyers or what avenue they're trying to reach with this. I think there's some big players on Oahu who just dropped out completely with this.
Because they didn't want to risk losing their, if you will, be disbarred or suffer some kind of reprimand.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dee, we're going to try it one more time. We've got a caller who wants to make a comment, but we'll keep you on this time.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us. Aloha, caller, you're there?
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
I'm just letting everybody know it sounds like we've got till 2018, unless we change things, because it sure sounds like corporate, some big players are trying to monopolize the medical marijuana thing. I much prefer seeing it, you know, if you've got a legitimate thing that you're allowed to grow, you know, your six plants or whatever, because you're going to know the strains that are best suited for you. And this idea of, you know, one guy's going to hold all the cards, I'm not in favor for it at all. And the next last thing I'd like to say is, 2018's close to 3 years away or 2 years away. Let's hope that we just get out of this marijuana, prohibition. A lot of it's religious based, just take lessons of the way alcohol was treated. And, let adults, I'm in favor of what Washington State and Colorado has done, it just seems silly. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in and sharing your mana'o on this. Dee, you made mention, the caller made mention about, the big money at stake here. Talk to us a little bit about that influence that big money has in the legislative process.
I don't think not in this situation.
Not yet.
No, not yet. Mm-hmm. I know in the dispensary business it's big money, but not in when we were going to getting this into law.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's some requirements that prevent some of the large corporations, off island from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I think. You know, each dispensary has to be owned 51% of it by a Hawaii resident who's been in Hawaii for at least 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But remember now, we had a task force that did a whole years of work on this, and we were kind of led by the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii too, and advocates for this. So it was a group of mixed organization. I don't think we had anyone from the dispensary side. I wasn't involved in that at all. But it came out as a medical need.
Mm-hmm. And in regards to the opposition, law enforcement, the county police departments, are they reluctantly going along, or are they still in opposition? What is your sense in regards to
like I said earlier, I think they're just looking for some financial support.
Mm-hmm.
Should this get going, they need more help, and I'm more than sure that the legislature is willing to provide that to them, and it is written into the bill, so that is possible.
Right. And you just, I mean, the earlier calls, the concern that we're going away from somebody who would like to, if you will, self-treat. That now they're being, if you will, kind of forced to have to go to the big box store for what they were providing for themselves at probably a more reasonable cost than they're going to get at the dispensary.
Yeah, that's true.
And so is there a chance that there is opportunity to amend that or to move more towards the opportunity where the backyard herbalist is able to take care of their own needs and not have to rely on the system?
No, unfortunately, I think that's only going to be allowed on Molokai and Lanai because there won't be dispensaries there. So caregivers
mm-hmm.
will still be able to do that.
Oh, wow. So Molokai and Lanai aren't going to have a dispensary.
I believe those two because I...
that's correct.
I think so, because they're small islands.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But going back to what that last caller had to say,
mm-hmm.
A couple months ago I had the opportunity to go to the Hawaii Cannabis Expo and speak with Representative Bilotti and Senator Sparrow, who kind of spearheaded this bill,
mm-hmm.
and I think their initial intent with this bill was to start with a highly regulated system and see if it's successful, and then if it is, move forward into possibly, you know, doing horizontal integration where dispensaries can subcontract out individual growing companies, you know, and if that's successful, maybe moving into co-ops. You know, I think that they just wanted to start really confined and see if it's successful and then possibly move forward into a system that, you know, allows for different avenues for patients and caregivers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is just a starting point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, I mean, it's certainly from the patient's point of view seems to have opened more doors or opportunities for them to get treatment without having to buy compost or, you know, start tilling in their backyard or have containers growing on their lanai. And, you know, that's, I think, an improvement and a step in the right direction. Now, if we can address the issues of cost and accessibility and affordability, then we'll be, again, making progress. Representative Morikawa, anything else you'd like to share with us before we move on, unless you would like to hang on for some more time?
No. I'd like to sign out at this point. But I'd like to say that there is still the employment part of it. Now, if you are caught with any marijuana in your system, obviously your job is, you know, you're in danger of losing your job.
Mm-hmm.
There's still that I wouldn't say incentive, but you're going to be careful. I think any individual will be very careful because that could possibly happen. So it's not as if this is going to, medical use is going to spread all around the island.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
there'll also be laws in place where you can smoke it, and you know where you can't actually.
Mm-hmm,
similar to the other smoking laws.
And this begs the question: what is the effort or the movement to decriminalize or to move towards more like the model that Colorado and Washington adopted, where recreational marijuana is now acceptable in those communities?
Well, that's a voter initiative. That's why that was able to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But referendum, they call it referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Hawaii, I believe that's not possible. So I don't see that we have a majority on making it legal
mm-hmm.
for recreational use.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it happening. I think for me, too, I'm more about getting the medicinal side strengthened before I even consider. In fact, I don't know if I would consider recreational at all.
There
it's
we go.
It's kind of scary seeing what's going on in Washington and Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Representative Morikawa, thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box, and thank you for bringing this bill forward and that we were able to successfully advance it to the place where the governor did sign this bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think at one point this bill did die in committee, and it was revived. So thank you guys.
First time ever.
Exactly. You know, that's a huge step. You know, there was a lot of people who were were real bummed out about it, and then you guys brought it back and got it passed. So, thank you guys for doing that.
Okay, very good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you back sometime in the near future, Dee.
Sure. Aloha. Thank you. Aloha.
And so I'm going to take care of a couple of, what do we call this, top of the hour business, a little bit after the top of the hour, and let folks know that this out-of-the-box program is made possible by the good folks at Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, Compassionate Care. And if you're on the phone, just be patient and hold on. We'll get to you very shortly. We'll try that one more time. Here we go, from the beginning. Hit that button and that button. And beekeeping,
Malama Aina. Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina.
Right on, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. That's our underwriters. Our underwriters are our good friends that keep this radio station happening. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be starting, I think, on the 5th. It's a Monday. Our fall membership fund drive will be in full force. So if you are an individual that has never been part of the KKCR Ohana, we welcome you to join us. It's a membership-driven, volunteer-run community endeavor. If you're a business owner and you participated as a wave rider or a underwriter, mahalo's for that, and we look forward to your continued support. And if you're a renewing member, thanks so much for joining the Ohana here at Kauai Community Radio. This is the Out of the Box Show. I'm Laura Christine, hosting Jediah McRoberts. He is a Kauai resident and a registered nurse who is leading the effort to develop a local dispensary for medicinal marijuana. The Kauai Dispensary Project is an organization that intends to apply for a dispensary license for the island of Kauai, and we'll talk a little bit about that application process and the whole licensing issues that we'll be facing. And it was great having Representative D. Moore Carr on the phone. We've got a caller who has a question or comment that they're going to share with us. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
How you doing? I'm Dave from Waianiha.
Dave from Waianiha, how's it buzzing up there?
Oh, it's buzzing. I'm happy we have the bill and we're moving forward very slowly, and also very happy that they amended the previous bill to get the medical marijuana out of the public safety and into the health department where it belonged. But my one problem with it is that they've now outlawed butane extraction, and that is one of the more pure forms of butane extraction, and they didn't outlaw any of the other forms. Like, you can still use solvent to it.
Well, still there.
Sort of. I don't know. You know, somebody in the legislature or something, you know, heard something and got their hands on a little blurb and ran wild with outlawing a very good form of extraction while leaving the more dangerous ones still legal. So that's my problem with the bill.
Well, let me ask Jediah or Dave, what is this butane extraction and what are the other – I know nothing about that, so include me in on that.
To make what they call a hash oil or a honey oil to extract the medicinal properties from the plant itself. One way to do that is to use butane and run it through your plant material, and it leaves you then a puddle of the pure medicine, and then the butane naturally evaporates from that, leaving the medicine. There are other forms that use solvent, etc., where you can't get all of the solvent back out of the medicine, so you're poisoning yourself in turn.
Gotcha.
I really perplexed on how the legislator just grabbed onto this one form of extraction and made that illegal.
I believe, in speaking with Senator Sparrow on this issue, that the bill text allows for butane extraction by a licensed dispensary, but not for the home user. And in talking with Senator Sparrow, there were concerns about the dangers, because anytime you use any kind of form of compressed flammable fluid, there's
right.
dangers presented, you know, and you yourself might be doing it in a safe manner, but, you know,
right.
there could be a large list of individuals who aren't, you know, and I believe there's a lot of negative press going around of incidences stateside where people are blowing themselves up, you know. It is a safety issue, I think, and, you know, they just wanted to protect people. But it will be allowed through the dispensary, just not the home user, to correct you on that.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for answering that.
Appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to share, Dave?
No, that pretty much covers it. But just you're allowed to cook solvent on the stove, but you're not allowed to use butane away from the stove. So I just find that interesting.
Hmm. There we go. Well, thank you for being an Akamai listener and sharing your manawa with us here and out of the box. We've got another caller. We're going to bring that person on up. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, is that me?
That is you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you for calling.
Really interesting comments and questions. I'm very appreciative of everyone being on the show. I haven't listened to it right from the very beginning, so I may be repeating a question. But I have a couple of them, and the first one is, what do you think the biggest policy changes are that need to be addressed at the state and federal level in order to proceed with this medical marijuana dispensary? And then the second would be that if I have or anybody has acquaintances who may be interested in investing, how would they find out more about the process?
Great questions.
Thank you, caller. I will address the first half of that question. Personally, I feel on a federal level, we need to remove the Schedule I status for several reasons. The first reason is for research. Right now, because it is an illicit drug, universities, our independent groups cannot perform any form of research on the plant itself. The second reason is the banking issue. Right now, by law, banks cannot do businesses with dispensaries, so you're essentially having an all-cash business.
Mm. So another form of the black market?
It makes it very dangerous, I guess, in some regards, that, you know, employees are handling monies, large sums of monies,
mm-hmm.
that they really shouldn't be responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're doing business, some of these dispensaries are making a $250,000 a week, and that's stored in cash in the dispensary. So you're a high target for that, and they need to figure out that banking issues, because it's really, truly unfair to put people in this position. Not only that, they can't write off business expenses, you know, whether it be electricity, our payroll, expenses for insurance for employees. They can't, you know, use that tax exemption like most businesses can.
Wow.
On a local level, I think some of the policy changes that need to be made are in the process of obtaining a license. So if I were a patient and wanted to receive a license, I would have to go to a doctor, many of which who don't know about the process of registering patients, and even if they do, right now the time frame is about 6 to 8 weeks from the time that you apply for a license to you get the actual card. Some patients don't even have that amount of time. You know, they have, you know, a small time frame. They could die of cancer in that 2 month time frame before they can even use the medication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in comparison with any other script, you can walk
down a Safeway and go get your medicine
the same day.
Right.
You know,
Call in that morning.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not really fair for you know, an individual to have to wait
two months.
Yeah,
right.
That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer the second half of your question, currently we are looking for accredited investors. If you know you want to participate in this once in a lifetime opportunity to be part of a
ground floor,
you know, this is it. You know, it's a great thing. We're trying to keep it local. You know, we would like to have it run and operated by people here.
You know? Now, tell us a little bit about your group. That way, I know you're not going to share who they are, but what are you looking for? Who are your ideal profile of either an investor or a member of your consortium?
Consortium? Well, you know, we are looking for professionals who are in the medical field, whether that be doctors, therapists. We also have a contingency of patient advocates. We have security personnel and experts on that level, legal team, and truly anyone else who's interested in seeing this come to life and to truly serve the people here on island. You know, as far as investors, they do need to be accredited because of the large sum of money that is required for this project.
So on the front end, you guys need to come up with $1.2 million
For any dispensary to even be considered for an application. Truly, you know, that number could be more two to three times that amount. On Oahu, per se, you know, they're looking to invest upward of $5-8 million for each of these licensees.
Wow. Caller, do you have any other questions?
No, thank you for answering those, and I just wish you really a lot of luck with that, because I think it's going to be an excellent thing for the community and for also for visitors who need to replenish their supplies when they're visiting here. Mm-hmm. So from a medical standpoint, I think it's very important. So thank you for all your efforts.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, thank you for calling. We have another caller who's waiting patient in line. Thank you for being patient. You are on the air.
Hey, yeah.
That's
hello?
You.
Can you hear?
We can hear you.
Okay, can you hear feedback from my radio at all?
No, but turn it down and we won't.
Okay, hang on just a second.
Yeah, not a problem. Just to let folks know, in about a half hour, we will be evolving from this talk
show. Okay, yeah, I turned it off completely.
Terrific.
Okay, my name is Michael.
Michael.
I come out of the 60s. Been around a long time. And all through the 60s, of course, it was marijuana was a new thing, and there was a lot of, you know, hype and fear and the whole thing. Now, the main position of the federal government was that not enough research. We don't know about it. It's undiscovered. It's a mystery land, so therefore it's got to be dangerous, and that's the way we're going to deal with it. Okay, so in 1971, I went to work for a company called Harris Enterprises. That was in Palm Bay, Florida. And I was a research technician. We were working for the aerospace industry. Essentially, what it was I did the research and development work for the guidance systems of Poseidon missiles. Later became a conscientious objector about what I was doing and quit. But while working there, I had access to something called a technical library. I'm not sure if you know what that is, but in these research firms that do highly technical work, these libraries are full of technical information, and it's not privy to the public. You can't find this stuff, and there's no stories in there. But, you know, it's all just fact. And so one day I had time on my hands, and I went into the library, and I pulled M off the shelf, a book, you know, M. And I thought, marijuana, let's see what's there. Okay, there was 40 pages of research work that had been done by the federal government at that point. This was 1971. And it seemed like the thrust of their research was to find out exactly what it did to various animals, including humans, and its lethalness. And so they started out with rats just to clarify, they used hashish, which is a, you know, concentrated form. And they stuffed as much as they could into rats to see if it would kill them. And this is, I'll just run down the entire scale of animals and what they came up with. Rats, it would kill. Cats, it would kill. And the reason that it killed them is that it dehydrated them and basically suppressed their breathing. It's you know, it's a sedative, essentially, is what it is. And so to cats, it was lethal. Above cats, that would be dogs, goats. Monkeys, they went to, you have chimpanzees, they, orangutans, they even, gorillas, they even went up to horses, and then finally, human volunteers. And what they found, dogs and above, is that, and I think basically it had to do with body weight, size, is that it wouldn't kill them. A dog could sleep for maybe 2 days, it would wake up dehydrated, and then they, you know, give it water, and they came back and everything was fine. The gorillas, even, the same thing. It would knock them out. So finally, the human beings, and the same thing. If you stuffed enough, and these were volunteers, but if they ate enough hashish, they would sleep up to 48 hours and wake up dehydrated and hungry. So finally, you know, I read this all afternoon, and there was so many facts and figures that was absolutely overwhelming. But at the end of the story, and that's the only thing that's important, the federal government officially listed cannabis as a non-lethal substance. And, you know, there it is. This is in print for anybody to read that has the privilege to be able to read it in the technical library. Of course, this you're not going to get this information on the evening news. So there it is, and it's been around since 1971. So I just thought I'd drop that. I'd swear to it on a stack of Bibles and be glad to present it in a court of law, but I'm sure nobody cares. But there it is. So thanks very much, guys, for listening to me, and I hope it helps some listeners in their fears and doubts about mysterious, horrible cannabis. Okay?
Right on. Thank you for helping me feel a little bit more calm about some of my friends and some of my friends' friends. Thank you for calling. We've got another caller right behind you. You're on the air, live.
Hello?
On the station that loves you. Aloha.
How's it?
Good. We're about a half hour away from evolving into the next radio program. But you're speaking with Jimmy Trujillo. I have Jediah McRoberts, who is leading the charge for a dispensary here on Kauai for medicinal marijuana.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, so the people who card holders, they can still grow at home, kind?
Well, I guess right now, up until if you have a license to grow for your own medicinal marijuana needs, you can until the 2016?
2018,
I think. 2018,
when they remove the caregiver program. So if you're a patient, you can still continue to grow.
For myself.
Correct.
For my card, my name on my property, I can do it.
Yes, you may.
But you're talking about multiple cards on one person.
Or the instance where, you know, there's a real sick individual who can't grow for themselves, so they designate someone to grow for themselves. So that individual will not be able to grow for this sick individual.
He will not.
Yes, but the patient can grow themselves.
And so it'd be a special case where somebody couldn't grow for themselves that they would be able to go outside and find a caregiver.
At this moment, yes, you can do that.
But in the future is what I'm saying.
In the future, that person, according to law,
will have to buy.
From the dispensary, correct.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a real big big issue.
Well, that puts the even worse person in who's can't really move to in a worse situation.
Correct. So they can designate a caregiver to purchase the product for them at the dispensary, but that individual can't actually grow the plants themselves.
Okay. But to access, they can still, if they need help for a walk or something, they get somebody.
Exactly, yeah. So that person can go to the dispensary and purchase whatever products that particular person needs and then come bring it back to them.
What, somebody's money is going to those schools and all roads?
I hope so. That's going to be in the bill text, you know, hopefully moving forward. I think if you look what happened to Colorado, I mean, they're generating...
These guys' places is beautiful, their states.
I mean, Colorado, they're generating so much tax revenue that they actually
mind-blowing.
Yeah, mind-blowing. I mean, they actually had to give some back. They weren't expecting that amount of revenue produced, you know, and I mean, 10% was going to the school systems.
Well, I don't think it should be legal because, you know, as humans, we want to burn down everywhere. So, you know, personally, nah, it shouldn't be legal. For medicinal use, I would see that you know, it's right, all this stuff, but you know how people get with all these extractions and stuff, but it's human nature, guys get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, everyone needs to be responsible for their own actions, you know.
Yeah, you know, we don't like to be dirtying up everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta, because we've been talking funny kind about everybody else, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy smoke cigarette, they talk about the guy who smoke weed, the weed guy talk about these other guys. But we all doing the same thing, so we gotta just watch our conduct.
Absolutely.
You know, as we walk around ourselves, you know what I mean? We cannot be burning down bottle pop, our kids gonna smell them. You're gonna be burning down everywhere, you know? People gotta understand that.
You gotta be responsible, you know? Same thing comes with alcohol, you know? Can't get out of hand.
Right.
Anyway, you know, back in the days, back in the 70s and 80s, I graduated 88. It was natural. Everybody was growing, you know, everybody. So, you know, it was, you know, what I noticed from back then to now, it's not a bad or good thing, but we used to have chicken fight. Everybody grow their own, you know, all the cash money on the island is still on the island. I'm a little bit disgusted a lot of these monies that come here. That our monies are getting flown out to other states, you know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, from back then to now, you know, a lot of that cash flow will go away. So, you know, a lot of the locals walk around a little bit empty here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good, I think it's a good thing, but and I'm happy for these guys who are going to run that place.
Because
I like people getting financial freedom, man.
Exactly, you know, trying to keep it local, you know.
Yeah, that's where it's at.
Absolutely.
So God bless you guys, but thank you for this, and have a beautiful evening.
Likewise, aloha, thank you. And another phone call, we're going to take that one up there really quick. 826-7771 is the phone line in the booth, 866-275-1112 if you're off island. And our next caller is up. Thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box.
Hello, is that?
That's
Hello.
You. That's you.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand if you have a license and then a person applies for a gun permit, that they are not allowed within 2 years of that license to get a gun, that you would have to not have a license, that it actually would go against you as a person that wanted to own a firearm, that you could not. Now, I've heard that.
So you're saying that you forfeit your right to bear arms if you're a medicinal marijuana user?
That's what I have heard.
I don't know anything about it. Tim's nodding his head, but Brother Jedi's
I'm not
sure
of that. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's real. It's funny that this person brings this topic up because, you know,
thank
first
you for
and foremost,
it up.
I mean, it is against, I would think, you know, the Constitution is doesn't that you're allowed, regardless of
to bear arms,
yeah,
well, unless
yeah,
you're
exactly.
a criminal.
Well, unless you're a criminal.
If you're
but
a felon, convicted.
With what this person has just brought up, you know, in terms of the facts, I was the other day down there in Kapa'a, and for whatever reason, on the backside of Rosa's Roofing, you know, down there, you know, close to Napa,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, looking
back
at this.
By the big red barn.
There it is. And this person, you know, because he, I believe, is a distributor or for
an arms dealer.
Munitions and
sure.
things of this nature, you know, an arms dealer, yeah. But it says, yeah, right there, he's got signs. You know, if you've got a medical marijuana card, you cannot purchase a firearm.
No can.
Wow. No can. And I was just blown away, just kind of going, wow, this is stark right there out in front. And I'm kind of, wow, there's something wrong with this particular picture. You know, people can buy alcohol which can send you off the Richter, you know, and put you in a very diluted sense of mind, and yet you can walk in there and buy a gun if you're completely polluted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yet somebody, because they have a medicinal marijuana card, you know, you are now like almost being ostracized, you know, from the fold, because it's like, oh, you can't do that.
Wow.
You know, yeah, and so here too, I think the... oh, boy, if I'm looking at Lady Liberty sitting there, you know, with the balancing beam in her hand, you know, how is this really swayed against those just because they're finding an alternative, a natural alternative to take care of their own health in a particular way that was, you know, justifiably as if though I were Lapa-Lau doing this, you know, oh, this is the way I need to do this to take care of my issues with my body, something that God gave me, and now you are going to sit there and ostracize me, and I cannot do this? What is wrong with this picture?
Discriminatory practice is what it sounds like.
I guess that's what it is, you know, and for how long has this been going on? When are we going to get out of the dark ages and get into the age of light so that we can help each other in a very, very... you know, responsible, loving way. And
absolutely.
In the course of that, too, my brother, you know, Jedediah here, I mean, I'm looking, and some people brought up some very interesting questions, a couple of callers. One being, if we're trying not to entice children to even get close to this medicine, you know, in the course of conversation, they're saying, like, wow, we're going to make these things in the form of gummy bears or this or that. And I was like, wait, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose here, too? You know, kids aren't going to be able to disseminate, wow, this is a medicinal gummy bear versus, well, maybe they might once they've tried them once or twice and say, guess what, I like mommy's gummy bears better than I like mine. You know, but, you know, it's kind of like there's an irony to the whole thing. Why are we doing this in such a way that you're really trying to entice the kids
well,
you know, to do something illegal?
The bill text says their edibles are not allowed.
Okay, in this point in time.
So what defines an edible is still in question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A gummy bear, is that an edible?
I mean, I would say if you put it in your mouth, if it's by Oz, it's an edible. But we've got one caller here. Caller, are you there still?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay.
That's me anyway, yeah.
Yep, thanks. I didn't know if I cut you off, so now we open the door and you step right through.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah,
concerning the not being able to get a firearm with a medical marijuana license,
right.
I think there's also to be a captain of a commercial vessel, a boat on the water running people up and down in a poly or whatever like that, you forfeit your right for a captain's license as well.
That's just unbelievable.
So somebody's livelihood would be at risk. If you were to say, you know, I'd rather not take that, I'd rather take this.
Yeah.
Or for that fact, why do I want to be legal? I'm just going to keep myself in the black market, you know, or underground.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Another thing I'm concerned about is when we're talking about such a high investment to get started in this thing, it looks like it's going to turn over to be, you know, McBud or something like that. We're going to get just these huge, long type people that are going to be, I mean, to build a whole grow area and then be able to process it and then put it up for sale, that's a big deal. I hope it doesn't end up being like Monsanto's marijuana or something like that. Are there any constraints on the type of growing that is going to be used? I mean, can Monsanto come in and develop a new strain of bud and have that be legal? Is that addressed at all?
Not in this current bill text. There are requirements, residency requirements, for the owners, but not on what type per se, you know.
Hey, they've been using that argument on us for a long time, haven't they? Hey, all your herb you smoke now is nothing but GMO, huh?
Yeah,
because of the way they cross-pollinate. Yeah, but it's not like we're putting goats in with, you know, my cannabis or salmon into my cannabis. Or, you know, I mean, the argument that they use was so ludicrous in the first place, you know, to do that. But you're right, you know, what's to stop the big corporate to step up and say, hey, I got the bones right now, I got the money, we're going to regulate, and this is where it is, and if you want it, you got to come to Papa.
And those are the guys who got the money. You can see this as a, you know, unbelievable investment as well because of the demand for it at this point.
Richter.
It's probably going to go Richter like it has in a lot of the other places. So in that case, it's going to become very desirable for the big money people to invest in this because it seems there will be a great return on it. So it's going to, I don't know, and people think, oh, we're going to get a lot better quality now that we got the big companies doing it for us. I don't know. They've been pretty sneaky about a lot of the other things they don't disclose to their customers in other fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, and right now you've got the local guy who's growing weed for you. His respect is on the quality of the product that he's producing. You don't have some big corporation somewhere else in the mainland or somewhere growing this stuff, even though they say that, you know, it hopefully will grow on the island. There is a loophole there that it will be coming from somewhere else. So to rely on it that it's going to be that much better, I don't know. You're not facing anybody, really. If you buy it from your local guy who's grown it, he's living by the quality of his product. It gets around. Oh, no, that guy's weed's no good this week, or it's moldy. You get it home and you go back to him. You know, hey, I'm not going to do business with you anymore. There's some credibility to this man as a grower.
Well, so I think that's why, well, tell me if I'm wrong, but that's why Jediah is, if you will, advocating for a local owned and a local operated dispensary licensee.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. Our focus
sounds good, but the money involved in putting this together is a big grow operation. There's going to be millions of dollars invested in just getting this operation running.
Mm-hmm. True.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, but if you look at individuals who live on island, who have to deal with the consequences of their actions, I think they have a different mindset as an investor compared with someone who may be on the mainland who doesn't have to deal with the consequences of selling bad products or, you know, charging.
Well, that was my point, exactly. That
exactly. So, you know.
And they're putting out such a quantity of it, like the thing of, oh, yeah, we got to check the mildew content and that stuff. That it's a perishable. It's every day it's going to be, you know, literally it should be inspected before it, as it's being purchased. Because if that person takes it home, leaves it in a plastic bag in the sunshine and there's any moisture in it, it's going to mildew on them, you know, fairly quickly. So it's not something that once it's checked in a factory somewhere with no mildew content in it, that's the way it's going to be. It might not sell for, who knows, a month. Is there a shelf life to them? Well, you know, there's a lot of questions, I guess, is my point.
Well, if you put your product, say, for instance, you know, as if we're talking a raw flower, you know, that's been dried properly, cured, you know, in the processes that you go through, and then you put it into a hermetically sealed, you know, container. I mean, boy, I've had some people, I hate to put it, bring their stuff out 6 months, a couple years mm-hmm. even, and it's mm-hmm. still about as fresh as they got it because it is in a completely airtight, you know, sealed vacuum bag.
Well, you know, if you completely dehydrate it, if you completely...
Hello.
You know, the connoisseurs of smoking it, they don't want it completely dehydrated. You can kill it over a period. That's the freshness of it as well. And so just to totally dry it out and preserve it, you might be able to preserve it for a longer period of time, but that I don't believe is desirable to most people. It's like the connoisseur... cigar smokers, they have a humidifier that they keep their valuable cigars in, and they keep it at a certain amount of humidity inside there so that it tastes proper to them or the way they want it to. So just totally drying it out, totally dry, is not really the answer to it either.
No, it
is
not.
It's not what people want, yeah.
And going back to your concerns about big business getting involved,
yeah.
I guess the one benefit, the only benefit, from it being a Schedule One substance is big business does not want to get involved at this moment because of the banking issue. You know, they don't want to get involved in something if they can't
deal with
it. So you know, right now what you're seeing in states like Washington, California, Colorado is the small entrepreneur, you know,
uh-huh.
you know, getting in on it. When the Schedule One status falls, you are going to see a heavy... influence
yeah.
from large businesses getting involved. So, you know, now's the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Now's the time.
I think some of the states have got it set up that way where small growers can bring their product in and have it inspected, and if it meets their quality standards, then it can be sold commercially in the dispensaries.
California is that way now. However, they are just coming out with new rules and regulations. I think... that is probably going to end in some fashion here in the near future. I think they're trying to get a little more quality control and accountability for products.
Uh-huh.
because, you know, in California, there's a lot of black market people involved with yeah. Mexican cartels coming and selling to dispensaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they're trying to legitimize the business as a whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be some downside to that, as you mentioned.
Well, these are the speed bumps that you initially go through always through the processes, I believe. You
absolutely.
Know? But then eventually they'll iron them out
exactly.
as time goes on to make it more efficient. Like the one thing I'm a little bit worried about, too, is who is like the third party regulator or the inspector of these industries. You know, mm-hmm. and how does that work? I mean, even there, you know yep. that regardless of what industry you're in, whether it's the liquor commission, this, mm-hmm. that, whatever, there's always this thing called the bribe or the payoff. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, my stuff is good, isn't it? Mm-hmm. By the way, as you're leaving, don't forget your brown paper bag, you know, mm-hmm. going out the door.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
kind of thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow, regardless of what you get into, you're always going to have an element.
Exactly.
You know, of I don't want to say corruption, but what, I mean, what other term do we use?
That's a pretty good term.
Is that human nature? It's in our genetic makeup, man. Mm-hmm. If I can get by with something, man, and push that box or that envelope, you're going to do that.
Yeah, there we go. So I'm going to just kind of bump us along here because we're running out of time.
Okay, well, sorry to take your time.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate that. I've got one more caller who's going to be joining us as soon as we take care of these station business ID things. So we'll be right back for the last part of the Out of the Box show with Jediah McRoberts, who's leading us on for medicinal marijuana, hopefully here keeping it local. But first, just got to play these things here so you know what's going on.
Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive. For a donation of $150, a brief message about your business will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 11-day fundraiser. The fall membership drive begins Monday, October 5th, and continues through Thursday, October 15th. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Wave Rider forms are available on kkcr.org or call 826-7774. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
That's really not dead air when you walk away from the microphone like that. I had a couple other things I needed to play, so I'll do this and make sure we're not dead.
Aloha, members of the Kekahu Foundation and KKCR. This October, the Kekahu Foundation Board of Directors, which oversees the management and operation of KKCR, will consider revisions to the foundation's bylaws, which have not been updated since 2001. The proposed revisions would give more power to the Kekahu Foundation members to participate in meetings, elect and remove directors, and make or reject future changes to the bylaws. The board welcomes your input. You can review and comment on the proposed revisions by going to the kkcr.org homepage, where you will find a link to the proposed changes and instructions on how to provide input, which is due by October 15th. Mahalo. KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
There you go, and you're listening to us. We appreciate that. The phone lines are open, 826-7771 here in the studio. I've got the right person at the right time. Aloha, caller, you are?
Hey, Jimmy.
Thank you so much.
Leslie.
Leslie, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I just want to know when they're going to do this with the bread and the wine.
You want to know what?
When they're going to regulate the bread and the wine with dispensaries.
Well, you know, I guess it's about...
When we can walk on water.
Walk on water.
What if
we had a treaty that protected everyone for the medicine? No matter if you're Native American or not, that has existed since before the United States, it's actually recognized by the Library of Congress and their state with a red ribbon on a certified copy, and there's a record of this on the island, And I just wanted to make sure that this falls into the category of fraud, pillaging, and looting because we are illegally occupied. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, although I'm not sure if all of our listeners were able to comprehend because of the phone going
breaking
in and out.
Up.
So share that one more time.
Slowly.
Okay. What if we have a treaty in full force and effect today that has existed even before the United States that protects everyone for the medicine, whether you are Native American or not? It is recognized by the Library of Congress where you can go and view this. You can get a certified copy with a red ribbon with their stationery on it with the signature and the whole thing. And we actually have a record of it here. And I'm not so sure too many people are aware of that. But because we are illegally occupied, it does fall under the category of fraud, pillaging, and looting. But it was a great conversation, and I just wanted to speak the truth and let people know that this exists.
What's the name of that treaty that you refer to?
It's a treaty for the medicine, and we are having a powwow this weekend, as many people know, and you will get lots of information there about this because it was with them that this was made, and our last President Bush was the one who signed off on that. And if you want to look it up, Google it, you'll probably have no problem finding it.
There you go, the Treaty of Medicine.
It was the treaty for,
for medicine.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it supersedes the United States.
Sure.
And the First Nations have jurisdiction over all of this for us, the people. Isn't that great? Our inherent right to life is coming.
Little by little, and I appreciate you bringing that up because I'm sure a lot of our listeners, like myself, weren't aware of that.
The case happened right here on Kauai, and like I said, if you ask around at the powwow, you'll have no problem finding out about it. I'm telling you the truth, and I know you know I am.
Thank you.
You would never be any other way.
Appreciate that.
Busted.
Real fast, okay. The powwow is this weekend.
This weekend. It starts at 4.
On Friday.
So be there. It's going to be wonderful because of all of the things that are happening on the international level and international court. So if you're not aware of that, boy, oh boy, I don't know what to say.
Well, there we go.
Well, where's the location of this powwow?
It's at the Kapaa Beach Park, right next to the library in Kapaa.
Wow, is that across the street from the Big Bubba's?
Mr. Bunt is the Powwow Council person for our island, and I've seen the flyers up, and Albert made an organic menu, and it's just beautiful.
Wow.
Nice.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And
well, let's go dance.
One more. Appreciate the call in. And aloha. Hopefully see you at the powwow. I've got this to play, and then we're going to wrap things up here when we get back.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of September 21st. There will be a brief council committee meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights from the agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has a request from Councilmember Hoosier for the county engineer to provide an update on the status of the Kekaha landfill to include but not be limited to the plans to close and relocate the new landfill, development of a materials recovery facility, efforts to pursue other solid waste solutions, including new technologies, and anticipated timeline for each of these projects. The Budget and Finance Committee has on their agenda Bill 2596 to amend an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016 by revising the amounts estimated in the Solid Waste Fund and General Fund. This is for the Kauai Police Department abandoned derelict vehicle coordinator in the amount of $140,122. Public hearing was held on this on September 16th. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcast meetings. Till next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
There we go. Thank you, John Gordon, for bringing us up to date on our council matters. And listeners, thank you for hanging in there. We're about 5 minutes until the evolution begins, and it won't be televised, but it will be on your community radio. And
Only hear it here.
Jediah McRoberts has been here for the last 2 hours to talk about a project. And thank you, Jediah, for sharing your mana'o with us and the work that you're doing.
Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. You know, we just really want to see this come to fruition here, you know. Having a dispensary on Island that truly serves the people and is run by the people, I think is 15 years overdue. You know, we have nearly 1,900 registered patients on Island. You know, a large percentage of them are going to the black market at this time and deserve better options. So at this time, we're looking for community members to, you know, anyone who wants to participate, whether you're an investor or a patient or, you know, a concerned community member, to please visit our website. You know, that website is www.kauaidispensaryproject.com. Or you can give me a call on my personal, my phone. That number is 808-651-1899. And, yeah, let's do this.
Let's do this. And do you have plans? Are you going to be doing any community meetings or any more outreach and engagement for community folks to stay involved and informed and engaged?
At this moment, we don't have anything exactly planned as far as dates go. But in the near future, we look forward to having some town hall style meetings throughout the island where citizens, patients can come and see what we're trying to do and express their concerns, and hopefully we can address those concerns and include them in our business plan. You know, our goal is, again, to keep this community focused. You know.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly appreciate you joining us here on Out of the Box, and want to thank you for your time and efforts. Listeners and callers, thanks for joining us. You've got 2 hours of evolutionary radio coming your way. We're going to go back out with a little... just the way we started with a little Peter Tosh to take us out into the bush.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Hey, thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. Jediah, thank you for joining us.
Truly.
Thank you.
And little Peter Tosh will take us home. Yeah. Dove, we're waiting for you. No.